This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's a brand new week, Monday, June 12th, 2017. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. The AccuWeather real field temperature could hit 100 this afternoon. Feels like 100 already. The temperature is 88 at O'Hare, 86 at the lakefront, and we'll have the five-day forecast coming up.
Yeah, it's hot, humid, sticky, makes you feel sluggish when you're walking around outside. The markets are sluggish, too. They're all trading in negative territory right now. Let's get the latest from Elisa Parenti at Bloomberg.
That's right, Rob and Chris. Right now, the Dow lower by 65 points or a third of a percent. But the biggest losses end the headline today. NASDAQ down 60 points or almost 1%. And this comes on the big sell-off from Friday. The S&P is down 10. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is fractionally lower. Large tech companies, including Apple, NVIDIA, Microsoft, and Facebook, are among the biggest decliners. Netflix down 4.5% right now. Apple is falling 3.5%. Morgan Stanley's chief equity strategist writes that the sell-off in tech was way overdue and isn't over. The money rotating out of that sector seems to be heading toward energy. Crude futures up to $46.17 a barrel. Economists are expecting an increase to interest rates at the end of the Fed's two-day policy meeting. That'll come Wednesday afternoon. Back to you, Rob and Chris.
And on our the Noon Business Hour today, we're going to be talking about the week ahead on Wall Street, also about economic conditions. The head of General Electric is stepping down. We'll talk about the significance of that.
And when you get married, what should the state of your finances be before you say, I do? We will talk about that coming up at 12:39. Then, of course, it's Stock Picker Monday at 12:49. We have a couple of suggestions for you.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The week ahead features the two-day meeting on interest rates with the Fed, plus key reports on housing starts, consumer prices, retail sales. We're joined by Bob Johnson, Director of Economic Analysis at Morningstar here in Chicago. Let's start. Everyone's been looking forward to June 14th and the Fed meeting. Bob, what are you expecting?
Well, I think that the Fed most likely will raise interest rates another quarter point. And, of course, what they have immediate influence is the Fed funds rate, and we expect them to move up a quarter of a point to somewhere between 1 and 1.25%. And that rate is still below what we're seeing in terms of year-over-year inflation. So that suggests there'll be more rate increases in the months and years ahead as well.
Is inflation strong enough at this point?
Well, it's an interesting question. Inflation has backed off a little bit in the last few months, and even the core inflation rate's down to about 1.5%. If you just kind of pluck out one single month, if you do the averaged over a bit of time, you're still pretty close to 2%, which is their long-term goal. I think that we'll have news on the consumer price index on Wednesday, and then again, I think it's going to indicate inflation is a little bit tamer than we all would have guessed a few months ago. But here's what's happening with the Fed. I think that they've so prepped people for this increase. Now, if they didn't have an increase in June, I think the market would be going like, uh-oh, what do they see in the data that we don't, and make everybody very, very fearful. And I think they've done everything they can to telegraph that they're going to raise rates. And now I think it would take something really, really dramatic to change their minds, because they've sent all the Fed governors out to speak and warm everybody up for this change, as well as some changes in bond purchase plans, which is another thing that will come up at this Wednesday's meeting.
From a personal finance standpoint, if you're keeping an eye on the Fed and perhaps you're on the fence about selling your house or pulling the trigger on a new one, do you want to get that new mortgage now before the rates go up later on?
Well, here's the really, really tricky thing when you ask about a mortgage. The mortgages are tied to 10-year rates, and those aren't directly controlled by the Fed. So there's a little bit more of a disconnect there. And right now, despite a couple of rate increases since December, mortgage rates are now just about the same as they were last December. So despite the fact that the Fed funds rate, the very, very short-term rate, is up 0.5%, we're looking at a 10-year treasury that's actually lower than it was at the end of last year. So, interestingly, mortgages aren't that much different yet. And I'm sure that's going to be of some concern to the Fed, and maybe we'll hear more about that on Wednesday when they talk about what they plan to do with their $4 trillion bond portfolio during the rest of the year.
Some people are calling it a dovish hike. That's having it both ways.
I think that they probably will, because they've set everybody up, and you need to get the short-term rate up to what inflation is, or else it creates all sorts of dislocation. So I think it's a very good thing for them to be to raise rates, and they're not feeling particularly like anything's out of control. I mean, the one thing I will say is that the unemployment rate at 4.3% indicates they should be raising rates. I mean, certainly their dual mandate is inflation, which, Chris, you mentioned at the top, that we're close, but we're not all the way up to the inflation level. But I tell you, on the labor side, the second part of their mandate, at 4.3%, labor markets are very, very tight. It's been decades since they've been this tight. And so certainly that would seem to suggest the rate increases ahead, and that they probably do need to do something.
You've got so much information, I'm sure, that crosses your desk every day. Is there anything that you're really concerned about right now?
Well, you know, I think because of how they set things up, I think the Fed, the right thing to do is to raise rates, and they've got the table set for it, and some of the preconditions are met. But I am worried that the 10-year Treasury rate is so low. It certainly indicates that somebody out there thinks that the economy isn't nearly as strong as the Fed seems to think it is, or at least the markets seem to think it is. And certainly we've had some weak auto sales that have been disappointing to us. We've had a weak employment report, a single one-off month, but nevertheless a not-so-great number. The housing market seems to have chilled a bit. It's certainly not an economy that looks like it's ready to take off. It looks more like an economy that's teetering a little bit on the edge. But like I say, for other reasons, I think the Fed will nevertheless raise rates. But I am worried about the economy, and we'll be watching the manufacturing numbers, the industrial production numbers that we get later this week, and the inflation numbers we get later this week very closely.
Thanks a lot, Bob Johnson, Director of Economic Analysis at Morningstar, based here in Chicago. Coming up, a shakeup at the top of GE.
A wealth of information for managing your money. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The CEO of General Electric is stepping down. Let's get the latest now from Brian Langenberg, who is the principal of Langenberg & Company, based in Chicago. Brian, welcome back to the program. GE is definitely a company that is in flux these days. It is leaving behind some of its traditional businesses, branching out into others. What type of company is GE as Jeffrey Immelt steps down and a successor steps in?
It's a great question. It's no different today than it was yesterday, but it certainly has transformed as they have divested the vast majority of the finance businesses. They really started acquiring in the early 1980s. What hasn't changed is really this is the same management team you had last week. John Flannery is a career GE executive, primarily from the financial side. He has been running, of course, healthcare the last 3 years. But this is incremental. I don't see any immediate change in vision or strategy here. In fact, I don't see one at all.
You know, I have to confess, most of my knowledge of General Electric was established by watching Late Night with David Letterman, because they owned NBC for a very long time. What are GE's entertainment holdings? Where are they in terms of the railroad business, manufacturing, or are they moving away from those businesses? I know they've sold NBC to Comcast for the most part, mm-hmm. but they still have their finger in the peacock somewhere?
If there are, the peacock hasn't told me that and isn't squawking. When you look at the company today and its business mix, it is mostly energy-related, aviation, and healthcare. When I look at the 2017 numbers in terms of profits, your power renewable segments collectively are really where the growth is going to come from, as well as aviation. It is a less complex company than it has been over the last few decades in terms of where the profit mix comes from. The challenge is on the integration and driving the cost out.
And tell us a little bit more about Flannery, the new leader.
Well, look at his background. He spent most of his career either in and around financial services or in corporate roles. He was the head of business development for a couple of years. And most recently, he took over healthcare maybe about 3.5 years ago, where that business is essentially a mature GDP-type grower. The margin has been good, so it hasn't done anything to thrill us. It hasn't done anything to disappoint us.
Do you make recommendations? And if so, what is your recommendation on GE?
Okay. We've had a hold on General Electric for over 2 years now. It's a stock that certainly has potential. However, you're facing some macro headwinds. The free cash flow has been quite weak with the divestiture of financial service assets. And in the last 12 quarters collectively, the ratio between what we call their GAAP earnings and their adjusted earnings has only been 37%. So it's a show me stock, and they need to show cash flow, and they've not been. So it's a hold.
It's up by a little over a dollar right now, and almost 4 percentage points up to $29 a share.
Yep. You know, it's been in a trading range of $28 to $32, more or less. Obviously, acting well today, but we submit that it's going to stay in this trading range until the cash flow shows up.
All right, thanks a lot, Brian Langenberg, who is the principal of Langenberg and Company, based here in Chicago. Thank you for joining us on the program. Up next, the latest numbers from Wall Street.
WBBM News Time 12:25. Let's take a look at the markets with Elisa Peretti.
Well, Chris, we are headed lower with the Dow down 58 points or 0.25%. The benchmark's at 21,214. NASDAQ down 50 points or 0.8%. S&P giving back 7 points. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is fractionally higher. The tech slide started Friday as Goldman Sachs warned the market was underestimating the risks in the sector. And then a Morgan Stanley strategist today says that sell-off was well overdue and isn't over yet. General Electric has gone from worst to first. Though GE is the Dow's best performer today, it has been the Dow's second biggest loser this year. That's a big part of shareholders' movement to push out GE's CEO. They're getting their wish, as you've been hearing here on the Noon Business Hour. The head of GE's healthcare business, John Flannery, is taking the job in August. The company that owns Burger King, Tim Hortons, and Popeyes plans to keep those chains and what they sell on their menus separate. Restaurant Brands International is not expecting any product synergies between the chains, according to the company's CEO. Now let's turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
And moisture on various amounts this week, and then cooling temperatures have grain sharply lower. December corn's down 10 at 396. November beans down 10 and 3 quarters at 937 and a half. And September wheat down 13 and a quarter at 446 and three quarters. The rain amounts are a tenth or less with 30 to 40% chances. So we might see it come back from the lows at the end of the day. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
A federal appeals court issues a ruling on the Trump administration's travel ban. A special report from CBS News just ahead.
Stocks are lower today. We'll see what's impeding the markets.
Money can be a tricky and possibly divisive aspect of a relationship. We'll talk about the conversations that need to take place before marriage.
It's Stock Picker Monday. We'll have some suggestions from an investor. Pro.
Police locate the family of a toddler found in a Chicago park more than 12 hours after the incident was first reported.
Wall Street, the Dow down 59, the NASDAQ off 47, S&P 500 down by 7.
AccuWeather says mostly sunny, breezy, hot, and humid, going up to 95, but it will feel like 100. It's 12:31.
CBS News special report. The ruling has come from the Ninth Circuit. That appeals court was looking over the injunction that bans travelers from several nations from entering the U.S. Live now to CBS's Steve Dorsey with details on what's been decided.
This is the same court, Dave, that blocked the president's original travel ban before Mr. Trump says it was watered down, explicitly leaving out Muslims as a religious group barred from entering the U.S. from six Middle Eastern and North African countries. The judges say the travel ban unconstitutionally discriminated against people based on their nationality. A separate federal appeals court has upheld a similar decision.
What's the impact of today's ruling? Senior legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
This is another appeals court that didn't buy the government's justifications for the travel ban. The court unanimously concluding that the president exceeded his authority in trying to implement it, and also said that a reasonable observer could conclude that it was issued to disfavor a particular religion. Remember, discrimination was part of the challenge.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Dave Barrett.
WBBM News Time, 12:32. The noon business hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
The markets are lower on this Monday to start the week. We're talking with Paul Nolte, portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. What's your notion of what's going on in the markets today, Paul?
Well, you know, it's a continuation of last week where the tech stocks turned severely down, and we're seeing a little bit of carryover from that. But when you look behind some of the numbers, it's actually kind of interesting to see what's going on. If you look at tech sector ETF, instead of being cap weighted where it's going to have a lot of money in Apple and some of the big names, but more equal weighted, it's actually performing well. Small cap stocks are unchanged today. So it's really been the story, continuation of the story of the first half of the year, where the big tech names have done really well and pushed the averages higher. Now they're just reversing some of that move in the last 2 days.
If you believe that the tech stocks were fairly dealt, and you know when they were reaching their new highs, do you get in now when the prices are back?
You can start to accumulate gradually. When you see these types of very sharp moves, you really don't want to step into the breach. You'd like to let the dust settle a little bit before you start making the investments. We saw this June of last year. We saw it again in November. It took about 2 weeks to go through the process, and then many of the stocks reversed and started going higher. So it's indicative of normal operations in the tech sector, where you have these big sell-offs, but eventually you wind up seeing them move higher on fundamentals.
So what's your advice to investors at this point?
You know, we're looking for a market to pull back a little bit, and this may be the excuse to do it. We're seeing a little bit better action in the bond market. So again, a diversified portfolio, not really needing to make a big adjustment here because of the sell-off in the tech names. The rest of the market actually is holding up well here. So again, really kind of stay the course, maybe look at picking up technology over the next couple of weeks, but no reason to really make huge changes in portfolios right now.
Another guest earlier in the hour said he saw a couple of red flags in the numbers that have been coming across his desk in the last couple of weeks. Are you seeing those red flags, or do you interpret them as red flags?
When you take a look at a lot of the economic data, it has come down. If you look at the GDP now figures from the Atlanta Fed, we were over 4%. Now we're down below 3% and in line with where many of the economists are. So we are still maintaining economic growth, albeit still at the 1.5% to 2% range that we've seen the last few years. Many of the indicators that we look at for bigger economic slowing, we're really not seeing just yet. So we're still in the camp of more of the same as far as economic growth, very slow. And that puts the Fed probably on the back burner, maybe in the last half of the year as well.
The markets, do you believe they're unsettled in a way because of some of the geopolitical events happening here in the United States and across the ocean?
Actually, no. It's really technology dominated. If we go back to Thursday, the volatility index was very low. Up to that point, the market had only moved less than a quarter of 1% for the prior four trading days. So it had been moving in very small measures really for the last 2 months or so. With the elections in France and England, really didn't have an impact on the markets. So really what we're seeing the last couple of days is more tech-centered. The rest of the market actually is doing okay.
Thanks a lot, Paul Nolte, portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management based in Chicago. Just ahead, important discussions about money that couples need to have.
Buy, sell, listen. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Finances should be part of this discussion as couples advance in their relationships, particularly marriage. Let's talk about some of the key points with Nancy Doyle, who is the author of the book Manage Your Financial Life, based in Glencoe. Nancy, welcome to the program. And When two people start talking about getting married, maybe they're moving in together, maybe they already have moved in together, at what point does one participant or the other make their finances totally transparent? Or do some people just lie about their money all the way up to the point till they get married and maybe after that?
Well, I certainly don't recommend the latter. And I think addressing finances is important before you make a life transition. And I think two important words to keep in mind are communication and organization. When you're going through a transition, getting married, moving in together, you need to take a comprehensive, objective view of your finances, and you do need to work together with your partner and be on the same page.
And that avoids potential pitfalls in the future, where if you keep your finances a secret, all of a sudden a bad credit score keeps you from getting a mortgage, or perhaps excessive credit card debt could get you in trouble as you try to manage some aspect of your married life.
Absolutely. And I think communication is the first word I cited. And I think it's important for couples to talk about big picture and also little things. For example, what percentage of your income do you plan to save? Going into the marriage, you may have very different ideas about how much saving is necessary. Also, a lot of couples talk about how much money one or the other can spend without consulting with the other first. I mean, talk through what makes you comfortable.
I would think that a marriage itself is forcing some of these conversations. We're in an era where we're seeing these huge weddings and destination weddings, and that's very expensive for the start of your life together.
I agree. And I think that, starting your married life together with large credit card bills is just not the way to start. And I often say, you don't have to furnish your home all at once. You don't need to start with a huge bill from your wedding. It's just not the way to begin your life together. And I think another point that is important to consider is people often ask me, should we combine all our finances? And I don't necessarily believe that's true. I think it's important before you get married, especially, to sit down and make a list of all of your accounts, your assets, and your debts. Kind of put it all out on their table, discuss it openly and honestly so you start to work together and be on the same team, because, behavioral finance studies show that if people work together, they will be more successful in achieving their financial goals.
Nancy, thanks for joining us today. Nancy Doyle is author of the book Manage Your Financial File, and her website is Manage Your Financial Life, manageyourfinanciallife.com, and she's from Glencoe, a suburb of Chicago. Join us later at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. Still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It is Stock Picker Monday on the Noon Business Hour. We welcome Adam Sarhan, founder and CEO of 50parkinvestments.com and findleadingstocks.com in New York. Adam, welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. And what is your first stock, your first pick today?
Hey. Sorry, it's a pleasure to be here today. The first stock is Bank of America. We're all familiar with what they do. What we saw last Friday was a real big shift in the market. We saw big institutions aggressively sell tech stocks and move into undervalued stocks such as small caps and financials. So Bank of America is one of my favorite financials. From a valuation standpoint, they're positioned very well. The company's involved with multiple businesses. They do commercial banking, obviously, the investment banks in Merrill Lynch. They've got a lot of great franchises as far as name recognition, distribution, et cetera, et cetera. And the stock still has a lot of room to go, just to go back to where it was back during the financial crisis and before. So there's got a lot more upside going forward, assuming that the economy continues to grow and Bank of America continues to fire on all cylinders.
BAC is at about 23.63, fairly flat today. What's your second pick?
The second one is U.S. Steel. So we're familiar with steel companies. They've been under pressure for the last several years, interestingly enough. Again, an undervalued stock. What really caught my attention last Thursday, Wilbur Ross, the current Commerce Secretary under President Trump, came out and said that he sees a quote-unquote genuine national security concern with respect to steel. Wilbur Ross is a self-made billionaire, buying undervalued securities. When he comes out, now current Commerce Secretary, and says it's a national security concern, and that him and his team are conducting, are very close to finishing, it's a quote-unquote very shortly, they'll be finishing an internal investigation with respect to domestic steel producers and consumers, that leads me to believe a lot more business-friendly policies will be heading towards U.S. steel producers. In addition, we've got the big infrastructure plan that's scheduled later this year, or at least within the next 12 months, and that should be a big boon for steel stocks as well.
U.S. Steel, the symbol is X, and is trading a little higher today at 22.12. Thanks so much, Adam, for being with us. Adam Sarhan, founder and CEO at 50parkinvestments.com and findleadingstocks.com in New York.
If you miss any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at cbschicago.com/audio and play.it. WBBM News Time, 12:55. Let's get the latest on the markets now from Elisa Parenti at Bloomberg.
Rob, the Dow is lower by 80 points, or more than a third of a percent. NASDAQ down 57. That is a loss approaching 1%. S&P down 9. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is fractionally higher. So investors are still coming down hard on tech companies, more so than any other stocks. In a tech rout that started Friday on Wall Street and spread to Asia overnight and Europe this morning, the concern is that this group of stocks has risen too far too fast. The NASDAQ is up 14% year to date, the Dow up half that. Dear Evan Hansen may have won Best Musical at last night's Tonys, but Hamilton, the 2016 winner, continues to be the major box office force for Broadway. Hamilton has helped lift revenue for New York's top theaters last year, even as overall attendance fell. The price of premium seats last year for Hamilton rose to $849. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
Progressive brings you Flowetry with Flo.
When Flo flows, she flows in the know. Mind ruminates the rates. Shown them all, I heed the call. Seeing the rest, I choose the best. Sometimes it's ours, sometimes it's not. When the fox walks, is it called a fox trot? That's a real question.
Compare Progressive direct rates with competitors' rates. Visit progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.